I tried to punch out for a bagel. I mean,
no, I'm not going to take his problem. Maybe I should keep the spot for that. Maybe I'm going to be fun to go out.
Still have one last akuda from the previous sugya. That's what I said yesterday, but we didn't finish that point yesterday. So let's see. Maybe we'll finish it actually today. We'll get it started next sugya. So we left off talking about some of the guidelines as to when we recite a Baruch Pri Adamo, when we recite a Baruch Pri Eitz. The Gemara spoke about guidelines in terms of things that grow annually, things that have to be replanted. Then the Rishonim continued the discussion in terms of where the roots are in the ground, where the trunks are in the ground. Then we spoke about the short trees and the tall trees and the bushes. And we spoke about the papayas and the eggplant, everything literally under the sun, in terms of plants. But then we moved into a little bit of a digression, which is more of a contemporary question. What if you have things that should be Bar Pri Adama, if they would be growing in a natural setting, but they're growing in a little bit of an unnatural setting, not growing in actual halachic soil. They're growing what we call an otzet shenanach, a flower pot without a hole in it, or the halachic equivalent of such in these million-dollar greenhouses. So what is that halacha? Are those automatically excluded, and we cannot say with a straight face, Bar Pri Adama, because it's not growing the Adama? Do I say no? That even those things are called Bar Pri Adama. So actually, the source for this is a statement in Chazal itself. It's not in the Talmud Bavli, it's in the Rishalmi. But the Rishalmi discusses the possibility of saying, Hamotzi lechem min ha'aretz, from things that don't grow in technical, halachic, physical aretz, things that grow in these flower pots. So the Rishalmi is not so sure, not so simple. The Rishalmi says, you can say with a straight face, Hamotzi lechem min ha'aretz, on these kinds of foods. And we have a general rule, whenever we find things in the Rishalmi, so we take a step back and we say, we're going to accept things in the Rishalmi, provided that they're not contradicted by what says the Bavli. So here we have to almost look a little bit and try to find, is there a statement of the Chachmei Bavli? Is there a statement of the Talmud Bavli that contradicts this statement of the Rishalmi? So the Rishalmi says, so pretty clear, at least raises the possibility pretty clear, that we cannot say with a straight face about the Lechem and Oretz. There is a statement of the Bavli. It's not talking about Hilchos Brachos per se. It's talking more about the Birchas Hamazon than it is about the Brach of Avotzi Lech Min Oretz. When the Talmud Bavli in the seventh parak of Maseches Brachos is discussing the Mishnah that puts a limit on benching on certain kinds of foods that you eat. The Mishnah says if you eat food that's treif, basically you don't bench. If you eat lechem that's not kosher, you wouldn't bench. What do you mean not kosher lechem? What would be an example of not kosher lechem? So the Mishnah gives you an example, something that's made out of tevel. It's made out of wheat, made out of grain that grew in Eretz Yisrael, that the proper trumas and maizos were not separated, and therefore you wouldn't bench. Why wouldn't you bench exactly? So that was a machlekes to Rambam and the Rabbi. The Rambam says, because you'd never recite a bracha when you did an aveira. It's treif, so that doesn't warrant a bracha. And the Rabbi says, that's not the reason why. The Rabbi says, because you can't bench for mezuman. So you have three people sitting together and doing an aveira, not called a shlosh lach ki'echad. They're not considered to be a unit because they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. According to the Rabbi, would you be required to bench? Absolutely. But again, Machlokes Rabbi and the Rabbi, what that Mishnah means. So comes the Gemara and says, if you're looking for an example of a non-kosher bread, tevel, pshita, the Gemara says. Everybody knows you can't eat tevel. Answers the Gemara, lo tzricha betevel tovel bederabanan. We're talking about tevel. It's not real tevel min haTorah. It's only tevel mederabanan. How is it only tevel mederabanan? How is it only produce that's required to separate tumas and maasis mederabanan? Kigon shegod ba'atzet shenanachov. The wheat, the grain grew in a flower pot without holes in it. That's the case of the Mishnah. So come the Achronim and say, huh, you don't bench on it because you didn't separate the proper tumas and maasis. But if you would have, then of course you bench on it. Ah, how could you bench on it? It didn't grow in the ground. So one of two conclusions. Either the Rishalmi is not right, that the Bavli assumes you make regular brachas on it, even though it didn't grow in the ground. Or maybe there's a difference between the text of Hamotzi Lechem Min Ha'aretz and Hazanas Olam Kulob B'Tuvah and benching. Maybe you could have the following halacha. When you have something growing in a flower pot, you have something growing in a greenhouse, you can't make Hamotzi lechem min ha'aretz, or as the Chayyadim suggests, you can't make a Bar Pri HaAdama, because it's not aretz, and it's not adama. Can you bench on it? That sounds okay. Nothing wrong with that. So it could be there's a split between the two. So if you have bread that's made in flour pots, so hamotzi, no. Bechazamozin, yes. So it's unclear from that Bavli, is the Bavli contradicting the Rishami or not? Why is this relevant for us? Grain is generally not grown in flour pots. Grain is not grown in grain. No, grain is grown. It's grown out in the Midwest. You need a lot of land to grow wheat. So all the wheat that's growing is coming not from no greenhouse in Sderot that are growing wheat. The greenhouses are being used to grow broccoli and cauliflower and romaine lettuce and parsley and all the different kinds of dills and things that I can't pronounce the names of them. Those are the things that are being produced in the greenhouses. Those are not hamotzi lech with the orange house. Nobody's asking. Nobody's calling me with the following shella. I'm having a slice of pizza, and the wheat that this pizza grew from grew in a greenhouse in Sderot or in Guatemala. That's not what's happening. What's happening is when you go to the store and you buy broccoli, buy romaine lettuce for your maror, and it says greenhouse grown. That's the red flag. So I want to know: do I make a burpee adama? Rabbi, bottom line is: do I make a bracha burpee adama on my greenhouse grown salad? That's what I want to know. So it depends. So if you follow the Rishalmi, then the answer is not. Because Rishalmi says you can't say moti lechem in aretz. Presumably you can't say bar priyadam on it. But if you say that the Bavli disagrees with the Rishalmi, and the Bavli sanctions reciting a bracha, notwithstanding the fact that they're growing in the literal physical soil, then you could make a bracha. Most of the poskim, I think today, are of the opinion that you can make a bracha on the greenhouse vegetable. I think that most people do. When you have salad, you got to say, what is up with salad? And they bring out the romaine lettuce. Are you checking it? Wait a second. Can I see where that bear came from? Is that a greenhouse salad or is that a natural salad? When you go ahead and you eat the different kinds of vegetables, you have a broccoli. Wait a second. This is greenhouse broccoli. This is pardes. It's not bodeg. It's not greenhouse. This is no. Most people are not looking around and checking the bags. People are checking the broccoli for other things, for kashrus. But no one's sitting around checking where the broccoli grew. I think that most follow this practice by default of reciting a bracha adama even on the greenhouse grown items. However, just because many people follow that practice doesn't mean that the same is true for hydroponics. Hydroponics is already one step removed. Hydroponics is things that are grown literally in water. Forget about growing, not growing in the soil. They're not growing in any soil. They're not growing even in the greenhouses. They're growing in water kinds of contraptions. That's a whole different ballgame. So the truth is that the things that are growing in water, the Gidul B'Mayim, became also popular in some places there in Israel. Also during Shemitah, a lot of the technology was developed over the last couple of Shemitahs to try to keep business afloat and not run into any questions in terms of planting literally in the ground of Eretz Yisrael. So there was a whole industry that was created of hydroponics. I remember I was in one of the kibbutzim, I think it was Kibbutz Chavetz Chaim, if I'm not mistaken, a couple of Shemitahs ago. So they're very, very proud to show off their entire hydroponic display. So if, even without Shemitah, you go and buy a regular container of tomatoes today. Very often they'll say hydroponically grown tomatoes. So what do? Can you make a bora pri hadomo on the hydroponic tomatoes? So many poskim said no. Many poskim said, even if you want to be lenient on the greenhouses, on the soil, there at least a soil, and it's something like soil, but it's not water. This is mamsh water. There's no dirt anywhere near this. So maybe one can argue, you say bar pri hamayim, what are you saying? You're like, shakal, I'm not sure what else to say on it. You couldn't possibly say bar pri adam, it's not adam b'chlal. And others say no. Others say you could still say a bar pri adam on it. Why? So they quote from Ravozno, the Gedolei poskim of Bnei Brak, from I guess our generation, previous generation, whatever you want to call it, but Vosner argued that maybe you could still say a bar pri adam. You know why? Because the Elta Zaid of this tomato was a bar pri adam. Where did tomato come from? The Rav Shalom created tomatoes. This tomato had a child. Many, many generations later, somebody came up with the idea of taking the tomato seeds and sticking it into a pot of water and growing yourself a tomato. But the tomato and its DNA is a bayre pri ha'adoma. So it all goes back to the original tomatoes from Sheshet Vibrations. So one can still recite a bar pri ha'adoma on that. So some accept that, some didn't accept that. I think most people are following that also, whether intentionally or not. You know, a lot of poskim were not so sure about that svara. I don't see most people walking around where they get tomatoes and say, wait, 1 second, can I please take a look? Do they say hydroponically grown tomatoes or not? I think that most people are literally looking the other way. It looks like a vegetable, tastes like a vegetable, so we'll call it a bar pri adam. Again, It's far from muskum. Both of these questions, both the question, the greenhouse grown stuff and the hydroponics, are far from agreed upon whether the correct bracha is a marpri adama. And there are some who want to split between the two. The greenhouse, maybe yes, maybe the water not. I think that most people are not either not learning the sugya, they're not looking at the sugya, whatever it is, they're not checking to make sure where the tomatoes and their salads are growing from. They're looking at it and saying it looks like pretty vegetable to me. So then I think most are following their practice of marpri adama.
Is the book you're saying that like the tomato is a pre adama? It doesn't matter how this question.
Right, that's what he's basically saying. You don't follow the each yachid be yachid. It's the klal of tomato. It's the family of tomatoes of our prayer number. So a couple of the whole sugya started. The whole sugya went back to a throwback of the Bar Pri Adam versus Bar Pri Eitz, that the Chazal Kaveya, that what is called Bar Pri Eitz, what is called Bar Pri Adam. So we had some of the rules are in the Gemara, some of the rules are in the Rishonim, others were developed a little bit later, Acharonim. And then you have these new modern day Shilas, whether we can make with any degree of a reality of Bar Pri Adam and these kinds of foods. Because now we really am true what I said, but we finished the Sugya. Now we're ready to start the next Sugya, and that's the Sugya of Bracha B'Chalosho. This is more of a general question. It doesn't address a particular tomato. It addresses a general rule of his Brachas, namely, can a person recite a Bracha in other languages as well, or must the Bracha not be said in the Lashon Chazal set up in Lashon HaKodesh? So when all the Sugya ends, first in the Mar Mekomos, the Gemara has a whole discussion about if a person recites a Bracha without saying the exact words Hamotzi Lechem and Aretz, he makes a bracha, Baruch Hashem Lechem, Baruch Shabara Pas Hazu or something, Baruch Halechem Hazeh. So he got the basic thrust of the bracha, that he kind of made up a little bit of his own language. So then the Gemara goes one step further, and he says that the Gemara goes on to discuss, he didn't even say his own individualized text in Hebrew. He said it in another language. So when all the dust settles, the Gemara said that's going to be acceptable. Even it's not the text Chazal said. It's not even a translation what Chazal said. It's his own unique text, but it does get the basic thrust of what the bracha is all about. So the mice, that's also going to be acceptable. So the Gemara tells us a story in the first of the Mar Makomos. It's the second of the paragraphs in that first Mar Makom. Binyamin Raya Karach Rift of Amar. So Binyamin the Roe, the shepherd. So he would take his bread and he would say, Brich Mari Dehai Pita. Say, blessed is the master of this bread. So that the Gemara goes on to discuss. Did he say a little bit more than that? Maybe he had at least say, Brich Rachamonim Mari Dehai Pita. Had at least say Hashem's name, because the brach has to have Hashem's name. Then maybe you have to have Malchus, and maybe he said, Brich Rachamonim Malka Dehai Pita. So we may have to be missing a couple of words here in the end of his bracha. But the basic thrust of the Gemara is that you can recite a bracha, at least in the Yemen, you would be Yotze, the bracha, either of a motzi, or in this case, the question of a brich sabozon, you would be Yotze, a bracha, without saying the actual text of Chazal or Misakim, and even if you didn't say Lashon HaKodesh, that would also be acceptable. So the fact that you can recite a bracha, brich senen, or brich sabozon, in other Lashonos, this is not such a surprise, because there are actually a whole list of other mitzvahs that can be recited in non-Lashon HaKodesh as well. There is a Mishnah of all places in Maseches Sota that delineates which mitzvahs of Torah of Dibur have to be recited specifically in Hebrew and which can be recited b'chol Lashon. It all boils down to Psukim. Sometimes there are Psukim that insist on saying it b'Lashon HaKodesh. Other times there is no such requirement. So the Mishnah lists off a whole array of different parshios. The reason why it's in Sota is because the first one happens to be part of the bits of Sota. So the second of the Marmakomos. So Eilu Nemor B'chol Lashon. The following can be said in any Lashon. Parsha Sota, the words that are said back and forth between the Kohen and the Sota. Vidoy Maiser. Every end of the third and end of the sixth year of the Shemitah cycle, so you have to take your make sure that all your maisers were given properly, and then you have to make a vidui. Here, vidui is not a bad thing; it's a good thing. Your mizvah, your modal emes, you're acknowledging that you've done all the mitzvahs properly. That you said biarti akodesh min abayis v'gav esativ la levi l'gel yosav abon, etc. It's every third and sixth year that you make that statement. So a lot of people confuse that mitzvah vidui maiser with the mitzvah of kriyas bikurim. That the din is when you bring bikurim, you say arami ovid ovi, that you do annually, and then when you do your vidui ma'is every third and sixth year, you say biyati akadosh min habayis. They have nothing at all to do with each other. The reason why people get confused is that they're right next to each other in chumash. At the beginning of Parshas Kisavo, first it speaks about bikurim, then there's an end, then the next the lead. It starts with every third and sixth year you save your Rebbe. So a lot of people when they read Chumash, they don't chop that these are two different stories. They're years apart, nothing to do with each other. I remember I was once reading an article about something. It was written by some quote unquote scholarly individual who was describing something about Bayis Sheni. He was describing the mitzvah of Avidei Ma'aser. And I forgot what the context of the story was. The person, I don't know whether he was from or not from, but clearly was not very knowledgeable. And he thought he was knowledgeable in the field that he was writing. He was writing a quote unquote scholarly article, and he missed the boat. Imamish blew it. He was describing Avidei Ma'aser Sheni with Maker Bikurim. He had absolutely no clue that the two had nothing to do with each other. It was you know, it had all the externals of being very, very, very scholarly, and then the guy Pasha never opened up a chumash and Sefer Dvarim read Pasha Kisavo to understand that they were two totally different things. So every once in a while, you have to always be very, very weary when you read, just because you read something that may sound like it's very highfalutin and love doctor means that this is before AI. This is when people actually wrote the Kavachomer. Now, so somebody showed me an article by something they wanted me to give an assessment how well I thought that this AI. Mr. Rabbi AI knew what he was talking about. He showed me a whole Shul Torah Erevin written by AI. This by Mokom and according this kind of this that blah, 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 blah. The whole thing except for one small Nakuda. The person had absolutely no idea what the difference between the wires of the Tzuzah Pesach and the box of matzahs that are put aside afterwards. After you make your wires and your poles, then you have to put aside a box. So in Yiddish we call it the Erev. So he's describing the Erev. He's describing how you pile up box of matzahs, and the matzahs are 10 tefachim tall. It's Rabbi AI is an absolute Amoritz. Never didn't understand the ABCs of what of Erevin, but it looked good. It looked very fluffy. A lot of chazanishes were in there. But she didn't understand what the box of matzahs and a pole is. So no. Anyway, so this fellow didn't understand the difference between the Meiser and Mikra Bikur.
He'll learn.
Yeah, what?
AI will learn.
They'll learn. Yeah. So bottom line, so comes a Mishnah and Sota and rattles off a whole list of different things that can be said by Chaloshin. So there's Vidim Ma'aseh, Kriya Shema Tvila, you can say Kriya Shema on all the Lashonos, you can daven on all the Lashonos. The Mishnah Berurah has a fascinating comment on Uchas Tvila where he quotes this Mishnah and says that in theory you can daven in English, that's the din. You can daven Shema Nesrei and other Lashonos. So the Mishnah Berurah says that we should strongly, strongly discourage people from doing that today. Why, says Mishnah Berurah? So here Mishnah Berurah goes on a little bit of a tangent, and it's interesting because he lived in Radin, and his part of the world in Radin, this was not a challenge at that point in the 1800s. Mishnah Berurah writes, because Yadua, that there are some places in Europe where certain groups have taken hold, and one of the big plums is you should daven in German at the time, Hungarian at the time. They should revise the tefillah into the vernacular, into the non-Jewish language. So he was referring to reform, of course. But so Mishnah Berurah says, so therefore today, first has to be very, very, very weary before the shul is going to say, oh, we'd like to daven in German today. What that means is you want to become reformed. So he said, I also know the Mishnah, says the Mishnah Berurah, that technically speaking, you're allowed to do it, but you can't do it on mosque. You can have shul, daven, in other languages. That's the first, the very, very slippery slope. Sometimes you have an individual, there's the Balchuba, they're breaking the teeth over the Hebrew, they push it, can't say the words. So, okay, so then on a case-by-case basis, we can follow this din. You can open an article skill, they can have it in English. But we can't give it as a global psak to start, everyone should start davening in English, because that does not have good consequences. So then the Mishnah continues, Bichsamoza, technically you can bench in other languages as well. Shrus Eidah, Shrus Epikodom, again, the Mishnah gives other halachs of Chashvuas that can be done with Chaloshin. So the Tosas and the third of the Mamakomos has an observation on this Mishnah that the Mishnah seems to be pretty inclusive. The Mishnah says, Pashasota, Nidar Meiser, and Kriyishma, a list of 7, 8 things. Sounds like everything is on the list. So Tosas points out the third of the Mamakomos. Hema. Amai Shir Hallel the Kiddush of Shabbos, the Birchas Peiros, the Birchas Mitzvos. So Tosha says, guess what? I got another 4 things that belong on the list. What happened to Shachal Nibidvarim? What happened to Allah? What happened to Kiddush? There's so many other things that are Nemar and B'chaloshan. Why does the Mishnah make mention of them? So Tosha concludes at the end of it, tells Venira, Tahani Nemar and B'chaloshan, Afilu Eno Shemeya. Says Tosha, maybe these things are even more lenient. I'm sorry.
He's saying, but you have to say the words that can't make up the word.
Well, again, as we saw by the Binyamin Raya, it doesn't have to be a perfect replica. It's got to be the basic theme. Like when Binyamin Raya said that, blessed be the one who created this bread, that's not exactly a translation of what's left with Oretz. It's got to be a close enough. That's a, So Shema would have to be the words itself, right? Shema would have to be, hear, O Israel, right? Right. So it's not exactly the same, right? That 100%, right? Kriya Shema would have to be an absolute, exact translation. That's what the Mishnah Berurah, that same Mishnah Berurah also writes, he would be very, very weary to say Shema in other languages because there are some words we're not really sure how to translate. The words in Kriya Shema, the word the Totafos Ben Erecha, I mean in English, it's a phylacteries. I tell you, go ask a person on the street what a phylactery is. I'm not sure who made up that word. That's the translation of the word Totafos. So there are a lot of words that are not 100% clear what they what the proper translation would be. So Tosfos concludes that throw the hands up and say maybe the reason why the Mishnah doesn't mention all of them is because the others are even more lenient. The ones that are not mentioned in the Mishnah, you can say them in other languages even if you don't understand that language. So I happen not to speak Spanish. So says Tosfos, you can't say Kriya Shema in Spanish if you don't speak Spanish. But you can say Kiddush on Shabbos if you don't speak that language. Whereas the things that I mentioned in the Mishnah, the Ne'amar B'Lashonam, in their language, you can't mix and match a language that you don't understand. So this Tosfos is very, very difficult to understand. You can't understand the languages, but you don't understand the Tosfos. It's almost like Ne'amarasha. Like, what does this halacha mean? That here the halacha gives us a leniency to say things in other languages. So what does that mean? Does that mean that I have to be fluent in that language? Or I can say any language. I'll get a book of Japanese and I'll transliterate the Japanese. I'll get up and I'll say Shema Yisrael in Japanese. I don't understand a word that I'm saying. So what? It's just a language. It's a lashon. So here Tosfos is walking a tightrope and saying, for some mitzvahs, the halacha is you have to understand the language. For other mitzvahs, you don't really have to. So nobody really understands the Tosfos. No, like it's almost very arbitrary. Some mitzvahs yes, some mitzvahs no. The halacha, we don't accept this. We don't understand this Tosfos. We accept the halacha that when the Mishnah says el me'mar b'chaloshon, that means in your lashon, you have to understand it. You can't say something in a language that you don't understand. So yes, it's true. Like the Gemara says, Shema Yisrael, the lashon Shema means a lashon of shmir havana, b'chol lashon shata shemeya, as long as you understand it, that's a prerequisite. You have to personally understand it. Now that is very, very different from saying mitzvahs b'lashon HaKodesh. A person does a mitzvah b'lashon HaKodesh, he need not understand what he's saying. If a person wants to bench in Hebrew, so you can say, Baruch, he doesn't know how to speak Hebrew, he doesn't know how to read Hebrew. He's got a transliterated bencher, and it says, Baruch Atah, they ask him, what does it mean? I don't have a clue what it means. You're still Yotze. When it comes to other Lashonos, then you have to understand. What's the difference? Why is it that Lashon HaKodesh has that quality to it that you don't have to understand? So we're going to hopefully develop this Yisod as we go on in the Sugya, that there are really two different types of languages in Halacha. There is an objective language and a subjective language. That the only language that the Torah recognizes as being an absolute true language is Lashon HaKodesh. That's the language that HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to us in. That's the language HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world in Lashon HaKodesh. That's the language the Torah has given to us in. That is a language. Those words, Breishis Bar Elokim, Shema Yisrael, are objectively words. It's irrelevant whether you know what you're talking about or not. It is an objective language. It is the ultimate universal language. Although the show knows, a Lashon is only meaningful if you understand what you're talking about. If I speak Japanese, so then Japanese is a language. If I don't speak Japanese, that's as follows. Like, I grunt. I say, it doesn't mean anything. Making sounds is not a language. Making a language is something that you speak, that people speak. If you speak words that you don't understand what you're saying, that's grunting. That's not saying Shema Yisrael. So that seems to be the understanding here. That's what it tells us. Very, very difficult. That it seems pretty obvious that Lashon HaKodesh parts ways from other Lashonos. Hakam Tosfos says, some Lashonos, yes, sometimes no. The Pasha and Shukarach, we don't follow this study. Shukarach, we paskim, like the later paskim, that if you want to be Yotze Mitzvah B'chol Lashon, if it's one of those mitzvahs that's subject to that leniency, because of the hate. But with the condition that you understand what you're talking about. If you don't understand what you're talking about, it's not going to work. So we'll have to see, is that always 100% true, that Lashon HaKodesh is always a freebie? No matter what, you're always yelling to Lashon HaKodesh. You never ever have to understand what you say. We'll have to backpedal for a little bit. then maybe a little bit of a condition to what we said. I'll let you but fine, then we'll continue with that. Yeah, right, right. The Mishnah's hard, right. So we don't have, I'm not sure I have a better answer, but the answer tells us very hard to understand. It's not fair.
Gemara will recognize Yavanis as a language.
Yavanis by writing.
Where's Aramaic from?
Aramaic is tricky. Aramaic is a Ramon of his kid that says Aramaic is so close to Lashon HaKodesh, it's almost like Lashon HaKodesh. Because the Ramon writes, we're writing a little bit in Hebrew, a little bit in Aramaic, so usually we